to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. Here with Dr. Timothy Schaefer, the Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at KSU and Assistant Director of the K-State Institute for Civil Discourse and Democracy. Quite a time to be in your position doing what you do.
It is. It's a great time to be alive.
It's a crazy time to be alive.
It is a crazy time as well.
We got the Kim Kardashian and Trump meeting too. Did you hear about that? They're meeting today.
No.
To talk about drug offenses and stuff like that. No. Like a very important issue. I do hope there is some leeway that's made. We got that phone call. Is that for us? All right, let's take it. Go ahead, caller.
What a reassuring presentation. Thank you so much. Every time you're on, it's a blessing to the radio. But, you know, whether it's a personalized train wreck in your life that you need to look at, as long as I had hair, I was combing it. And as my hair thinned out, the other day my son walked behind me and said, "You got a mole on your head. We got to go to the doctor." So we did. He says, "Oh, we think that's melanoma. We're going to cut it out tomorrow." They cut out a piece as big as my hand, as my palm of my hand. And then they cut down through my lymph nodes. We're going to find it. You know, they found nothing. "Oh, this is going to change your life. You need radiation and you need chemotherapy." You know, I don't think so. Here they all come after me. But it's the same way with that you talked about earlier times. That yellow press took us into the war. And then they kept us pumping the story. And then they let Pearl Harbor happen. And that took us into the war. The things that they know about, that they present, and then the things that they don't know about or they don't want you to know about, they suppress the news so that who knows what we're getting involved in. Thank you so much for broadening our horizons.
No, thanks for your comment. I think, my point earlier, and you've echoed it in some ways, is the, you know, how do we temper, kind of scale back a little bit? And it's not that you don't care, right? It's not that you're not passionate or that something's not significant, so, you know, the example that you used. But I can think of the scenarios when I've had medical issues and such that I appreciate the, the kind of slow pace, if that can be possible, in contrast to immediately jumping to something. But, you know, it's very tempting. There's the desire to have it be the more kind of dramatic thing, and sometimes there are vested interests which complicate the matter, especially when we're talking about more like kind of public civic discourse. Is that I have a lot of respect for those in media, journalists, and it all kind of scales and stripes, and the realization also that it has to be tempered in some fashion that. As we were saying earlier, not everything can be kind of the breaking thing, because when it's, I say this to my little kids, right? It's kind of the crying wolf thing. You have to be careful of every time creating the large issue or instance, and because when something does come, I want it to be addressed. I don't want it just to get lost in the sea of everything else.
And that's an interesting topic to maybe kind of dive into a little bit, especially with the mention by the caller of yellow journalism, especially when you talk about the Spanish-American War. That's, if you research yellow journalism, that's usually kind of the time period you're looking at, kind of around that early 1900s, late 1800s. And I do kind of wonder the contrast and comparisons of that era to today. You mentioned that sea of information. And it's difficult. I think the hardest time right now, and one of my most hated phrases right now, is fake news. It mainly just because it hits me personally, because I mean, this is what I do. You know, I am a journalist, and I don't believe that all journalists are just out there trying to make stuff up, et cetera. But I think it is really hard right now. It seems like just nobody understands what the truth is anymore. And well, that no matter what you maybe bring up, there's going to be somebody that's just going to decry it. It just amazes me right now that your big papers of record, New York Times, Washington Press, for a huge percentage, depending on your political party, of this country, they are now no longer legitimate to those people. And we're talking about the New York Times and Washington Post. Yeah. These are the Washington Post broke Watergate.
Yeah. No, I mean, I later this morning, I'm going to be doing a presentation remotely for a number of people in Minnesota. They're at the University of Minnesota, in Morris. And you know, one of the themes that I am going to end up talking about is a little bit on this topic, right, of the perception and some acceptance of information and where bias falls. And one of the slides that I use in particular is from a lot of research around civility and incivility, right? So amazingly high numbers of people say that civility is being diminished significantly, right? But when you start to parse some of this out, it starts to, some of these things end up falling along partisan lines. And then you have to think a little bit about, what does that mean? What are the implications that back to that example of the kind of crying wolf, if everything everything's intense, everything's kind of questioned, regardless of where it's coming from, like there are concerns there, right? What are the implications that when something is significant and, as you mentioned, the papers of record, right, as they have been, how do we attend to that? What happens when we don't have anything to kind of latch on to from a more kind of objective, kind of thorough perspective? And I think that's one of the significant obstacles that we face is, and we do this in our work with the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy here at K-State, we have these guidelines for kind of principles for civil discourse. And one that we added about a year and a half, I guess maybe almost 2 years ago, was, to basically back up your claims. And that could be factual information, but it could also be through lived experience and kind of contextual, depending on what the topic is. But that was in part put in to those principles because we were finding that people were just kind of making statements, kind of claims, without grounding it in something. And there's something to be said about that. And so I do give, some value, obviously more significant value to kind of tried and true journalists in contrast to, kind of a political commentator, because that seems to be, myself included, when I come in here and kind of get to chit chat about some of these things. But, for the kind of the talking heads, like, that's not the same as the person who's beaten the sidewalk to get the story, those kinds of things. And I think that's very unfortunate, and it's detrimental to democracy if we lose or have kind of a confused sense of where does truth lie, not in a big T truth, but like, where are some of these verifiable facts and viewpoints that are getting obscured for the forest that exists now as places where we can get information.
Does it just get to the point where folks don't understand the difference between an editorial and a news story?
Well, I think that's part of the problem, but we've also made it more complicated to navigate between those things, right? To see where is this very clearly, where is this reporting, and where is this, the opinionated political perspective that may or may not be, supported or encouraged, right? Those kinds of things. Those are very different things, and that's unfortunate when we've blurred the kind of commentary with the more traditional kind of objective sense of what journalism is.
Dave, did you have something you wanted to add?
No, not really. I mean, there's all kinds of things, that we've been. It seemed like, now we have the Roseanne issue here for the last 48 hours or so, something
not
like
even.
That.
Yeah.
And the world's blown up over that. Before that was the national anthem controversy. And does this make one wonder the value of social media? Especially if you, and what I see, and I find myself pretty much a middle of the road type of guy. I feel like I'm fairly open-minded, but it seemed like there's this chasm between the extreme left and the extreme right. And those are the ones that, and in some areas it's narrowing, but in others it's widening.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a kind of a quick entrenchment into camps, which is one of the biggest things that a lot of the people who work in the area that where I'm situated, there's an organization called Living Room Conversations, and it's about as simple as it sounds. But the way it's structured is that there are two kind of leaders, people who organize folks, and ideally they will have some different political views, and right, they'll come together and they'll have some conversations with small groups in a very comfortable kind of family room setting. In part because this is another one of those slides that I use all the time is drawn from work from people like Bill Bishop and others he wrote this book called The Big Sort a number of years ago, and basically found that, you know, we live in places that, you know, look like us, our neighbors look like us, socioeconomic status, we kind of slide into those categories. And increasingly, we also are attending, you know, religious services in places that are homogenous and all these other spots. One of the last kind of truly diverse places that we end up is work. But other than that, we're largely kind of sorting ourselves into these different kinds of communities. That was Bill Bishop's argument. And there are implications that, some serious ones that come from that, because if we're regularly only talking to people who, you know, reinforce our views, another colleague who was just here at K-State not too long ago, Martin Karkason, I feel like I've mentioned him before, is doing a lot of work around this work of dialogue and deliberation as it relates to kind of social psychology and some of these things. And what a lot of the research points to is that even though we have all this information available truly at our fingertips all the time, we find the things that reinforce our views and right, and we diminish or find some way, we, you know, wherever that hole is in that argument on the other side, we say, see, that's why that's wrong, and it only further reinforces, which is, you know, to your point, part of the frustration with, say, social media is that that's a model that's built to make you kind of feel good or maybe collectively frustrated, right, depending on what the topic is. But, you know, that's a business, right? So we can't forget, you know, it's not an agnostic platform. It's got its own preferences and algorithms, these kinds of things that have implications, right? And so all of these pieces together, the kind of echo chamber piece, the reinforcement of that through our consumption of media and kind of information, whether social media or otherwise, is a significant piece. And so it gets, you know, highlighted, exacerbated in these moments when and I'm not defending what Roseanne Barr said. I think it was awful. And I mean, this was one of the critiques of the free speech piece, right? I mean, you can say what you want. I could say anything. Well, I couldn't say anything. I'd get you all in trouble, right? Certain things I couldn't say.
Well, I mean, but the point is you could. Right. There's consequences.
Right. Well, exactly. Right. I mean, so maybe I don't get to come back on the next fourth Monday. Right. I mean, so. Right.
None of us probably do.
Right. Yeah. So this is our great sign off. No. But I mean, there are implications. I mean, it's the same way that, you know, as a professor at a public institution, certain expectations of how I'm going to function, how I'm going to be, right? I mean, so there are repercussions. It's, you know, I could say things and I could have my department head or you know, Provost Mason say, thank you very much. And, you know, there's the door. So I think we have to, you know, also take that into consideration. That back to what I was saying at the top of the hour is, you know, we have to be cognizant of what we're saying, how we're functioning, what we're doing, and realize that there can be implications, right? So if I say something dramatic about you that is unfounded, or even if it, you know, even if there's a kernel of truth, like I have to think about that. Well, what are the implications there, right? And that's part of it, you know. So it's not just free for all, anybody saying anything all the time, but how do we if we're going to try to engage in a way that gets at more of the heart of the matter, you know, so the blow up of the last 24 hours or however long it's been, how do we make some sense of that? And not in a kind of an equivalency kind of perspective of like, well, they did this, and so this other side, let's find this other example over here, because I don't think that's necessarily appropriate or helpful. But I think we do need to, you know, get underneath it a little bit. So yeah, I think that's one of the great challenges we face right now.
Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll be back with Dr. Timothy Schaefer here on In Focus on News Radio KMAN.
KMAN Morning News brought to you by Manhattan Appliance and Sleep Source, your appliance specialist located in the West.